All right, welcome back to Youngstown Studios. It's another edition of Turning Red with Denny and Regina. And we have a special guest here today. Regina is, as always, has another appointment today. She's busy doing politicking. Nobody knows that better than you.
Oh, yeah.
But we have, we've got two heroes with us here today to talk about Afghanistan. For the layperson, we thought this would be a timely topic. And with us here on today's show, I've got Robert Santos. Robert's a U.S. Marine, and he's also turned politician. So he's got a little political junkie, I'm sure. You host your own podcast in the basement occasionally, talking about worldwide, local, state politics. Yeah. So welcome to the show, Robert.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And then we have Chuck McManus. And yeah, that is a familiar last name there.
How about that?
That's a familiar last name on this show. And Chuck is a distinguished retired Army Ranger. Yes. Now we always had that song, I want to be an airborne ranger, this and that. Army Ranger, for those in the military, they know exactly what it is. And for the average person out there that doesn't understand what a ranger is, they've all seen the movies with Chuck Norris and
Black Hawk Down
and things like that. And it's kind of like the special forces. You got the Green Berets, you got the Rangers, and
you got CAG, Delta.
Delta Force, all those different things. Well, Army Ranger is right up there, one of the toughest branches of military to get in. And they are kind of like the Navy SEALs of the Army. And you served there for 21 distinguished years, right?
Roger.
Yes. And you had many tours overseas, many tours in Afghanistan. So some of these things you're seeing on the news, you've been there. You've seen it. I know you're a news junkie also.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Fox News junkie. You follow what's going on. And, you know, we got to talking a little bit over the last couple of weeks when this happened. And, you know, my opinion of it and the average Joe driving home right now's opinion of it, everybody's got an opinion. But we haven't been there. We haven't seen it. We haven't tasted it. We don't understand it. Robert, you've recruited young men to join Uncle Sam and to guide them and take them in and promise them, you know, three squares and an education and honor and good feeling about themselves and saving the world, basically, with becoming a Marine. And so you've seen these boys that are over there and have gone over there before, in and out and in and out. And then your own service that you had through the Marine Corps. And Chuck, through the Army Rangers, you've done many deployments. We'll get into this stuff here in a little bit. And this is something where when they're talking about
Afghanistan, I mean, Robert, you can even attest to this. It's accountability.
Yeah.
And you're just like rolling your eyes. You're like, what is going on? And today, one of the lieutenant colonels from the Marine Corps resigned.
Yep.
17 years, no moss, he's out, you know, and it's, you've seen it, you know, accountability is, I know it, you know.
First of all, let's start this off on this show that absolutely none of this, 0% of this, what's going on, you see on TV, the hostility, the angst, the disgruntledness, absolutely zero of this is pointed towards any service member of any sort.
No, it's all the upper chain.
No corpsman, no Marine, no soldier, no Coastie. There's nobody that's responsible for this. And then when you even get up to the brass, the sergeants, the drill sergeants, even the generals, they are doing a job that's given down from them from the very top. So weird. This is by no way, shape, or form anything we see. And then when people are criticizing what's going on and how could you leave weapons over there and how could you abandon the people, it had nothing to do with the players. This is all the ownership. This is all the management.
Yeah.
You know, if you put a bad team on the field in football and that team goes out there and sucks,
head coach, because
the head coach is put in and who shouldn't be there. And then you get the owner wants to have involvement. You see with the Dallas Cowboys, take the owner out of the equation, they'd probably be a pretty damn good team.
Yeah.
But when you try to monkey up top with it and it trickles all the way down, you can have the best players in the world. They're not going to win a Super Bowl if you got horrible management up top.
Well, that's why I think, like, Trump put the, you know, there was a carrot and a stick, and he's like, you know, anybody gets hurt, we're going to bring the wrath down. And believe me, I've seen the wrath of this military. It's pretty crazy. But Biden is just OTF.
How'd you guys get involved, Chuck? How were you inspired to join the Army in the first place? Many years ago. You've been retired now for a few years.
Just, you know, I grew up in Trumbull County out in Cortland and Mecca and stuff. And I couldn't get into Cockweld, couldn't get into Delphi or Lordstown. and I had enough. You know, I did a little bit of schooling, and I'm like, that's it.
What year did you go in?
88. I was in every fight since 88. You know, I did my airborne and went to Ranger school finally, you know, a year into the third bat, and then I just I liked it, and that was the scary part of it. You know, I was good at it, and it's I growing up there is you can attest to this is the harder you are and the stronger and the fitter and the smarter you are, the faster you progress.
Yeah.
You just and that was right up my lane. So I was a PT animal, you know, weapons, everything. And I just morphed and I just liked it and kept
going. See, that's a little different. I'm going to guess, Robert, 911, I'm sure, inspired a whole generation of people in the service. Is that what inspired you?
It was for me. I actually I went down to the recruiter not too long, but a month after 9/11 to recruit and actually go into the United States Marine Corps. I did obviously promise my grandmother actually made me promise to finish college before I joined the Marine Corps, which is why I enlisted in September of 2002. So I went in like pretty much a year later. So I did finish college. I got my associate's degree in criminal justice, but that was it. Obviously, growing up, I love this nation. I always knew that I wanted to do something to help this country out. I loved everything that had to do with it. My grandfather was United States Marine. He served in the Korean War. My uncle was in the Marine Corps.
That's a lot of this valley is a lot of Marines because, like, all my uncles were Marines. My dad was a Korean War vet from the Army.
And you talk to the old timers, the ones that carved this valley out. You know, my uncles and stuff, they were all Korean guys. They were all in the Army. All these guys that worked at the steel mills and Packard and General Electric and GM. A lot of those guys in that generation would probably be 80 and up now. You know, they all serve proudly in the Army. And that was before Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, of course, we got our proud Vietnam veterans from the Valley also.
Right.
But there was a whole generation of Korean War era Army guys, it seems like.
But that's why I joined, because I saw the pride that my grandfather, my uncle had in the military. I saw how well they were taken care of, which is why I wanted to serve in the United States Marine Corps. Because I saw how they'll take care of you. And God forbid, if something did unfortunately happen to you, you knew that the military was going to take care of your family and your kids. They were going to make sure they were taken care of, which is why what happened last week.
Just astounding.
I still can't even find the right words for it. Because
a lot of us are baffled. You're just like,
everything
what
that I believed
is going
in,
on?
Everything I fought for, everything I told the kids here in Trumbull and Mahoning County when I recruited the kids right here in the valley, I promised them. And they just made me a liar. Current administration has made me look like a liar because I promised that we would have their back. And our administration just pretty much turned around and they spit on them. I mean, how dare they leave a man behind? That's a golden rule.
That's no fifth stanza of the Ranger Creed.
Whether it's Marine Corps, Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, whatever.
Boy Scouts, you don't leave a man behind in the woods.
And you always go in teams. You always go in buddy teams. And like, that's one thing I don't get. What's
the movie with Tom Hanks where he... Band of Brothers. I'm sorry. Where he says that he was the colonel commander. He's like, I will be the first one on the battlefield, and I will not leave till everyone else is gone.
Oh, that's we
and
were
he was
soldiers.
The last, we were soldiers. Okay. Yeah. And it's like, because he had that mentality. That mentality is. I know it's a movie, but that's what we have in the military. It's like you never leave anyone.
Yeah,
behind.
People don't.
That's what I. That's what
they
I'm
don't
saying.
Like.
That's what I'm saying. It's not the personnel.
And it's not just military. We never leave military behind. You won't even leave civilians behind. And the fact that we pulled our military out before we pulled out the civilians.
You're
is
just
like
scratching
ridiculous.
Your head. You're
it's like you're going home
head,
by like, here in Youngstown. A lot of people are not well off. And you don't have, you only have enough money for one can of raviolis. It's like, okay, well, forget the kids. I'm going to eat because I'm the parent. That's exactly what happened.
Or let's pull the cops out of Youngstown.
It's whatever. You know,
we're going to pull the cops out, save budget. We have budget cuts. This first one we're done.
All the shootings that are going on. Hey, it's all right. Let's just get rid of the cops and let the shootings happen. It's like, what they're doing. They're leaving.
You can't do that to a poor little old lady neighbor that's having shootings in her neighborhood.
Especially when the civilians.
She deserves help too.
Not just the American civilians, the Afghanistan civilians that are there.
That's
they
terrible.
Were customized how things were going.
They tasted freedom for about 15, 18 years until last 2 years, because I don't know really what went on. But we just pulled the rug out from their feet.
They did not understand that these females now have to wear
the burkas and all that shit
all over again. They were just able to show their faces and actually
go to school.
Go to school. And now it's back like you're in America in the 1920s where the females can't do anything. I was like, these people wanted us. They didn't like.
And we're relying on Taliban intel.
Like,
are you kidding me?
It's ridiculous. I mean,
well, let's talk about that for a second for the average person. Okay. There's Afghanistan. There's Iraq. There's Iran. And I know, you know, at one time or another, they've all been enemies of ours. You know, Saddam Hussein was in charge of Iraq. Of course, bin Laden was protected pretty much by the Afghanistan, by the ISIS or Taliban or
Taliban.
So Taliban. That region has always been hostile and it's always been a mess for us. We got in that region when I look back on it after 9/11, you know, I'm thinking of you know where we went into Iraq and blamed Saddam and the areas where we had the Kuwait, where we had the oil fields and everything, where we gave those up basically, we didn't keep the oil. You know, right. We went in, we didn't keep the oil, prices went up a whole nine yards, that type of stuff. How, I guess, I'm going to ask this on Chuck first. How did Afghanistan get in this whole big picture? Because they harbored
terrorists. All the terrorists.
Is that why they got in this fight? Is that why we jumped into them?
That's where Osama bin Laden was, because he's up north of Kabul in Helmand province and shit like that. And he would jump back and forth to Pakistan and back over. And it was like, we knew he was there. And that's where they fought in the mountains, 101st, and did all that fighting in the early, like, 2000s or whatever, 3-4. And they did a lot of fighting over there, and he would just hop back and forth. And you can't stop it because there's a thing called a Durant line that you can't – it's an international thing, and it's – you chase them down, and you know they're bad, and they just – you know, it's like fighting an invisible man half the time over there. It's – crazy.
But we finally got it. We finally got the call. We finally got the order, and we finally went in and got him. But he wasn't just the one.
No.
In your career, there was a whole hit list of most wanted terrorists, a whole
list of these
people.
Cell phone people, everything. And that's the thing. Like, these guys are like, oh, well, we left the Terps over there. Oh, well, these are the guys that spoke Farsi fluently, and, you know, they wanted the guns, they wanted the bombs and everything, and they helped segregate everybody once you got in a raid. To get them all out, you know what I mean? And you're like, no, this one's bad. You're like, Mac, get this one over there. And you just, you know, sandbagged them and got them out of town.
And I saw the news last night. Now Russia's pissed because we armed the Taliban, and they kind of had control over them somewhat. Now they said Russia's going to negotiate to buy some of our weapons.
That's
so they
wonderful.
Can understand our technology. They want to see our tanks. They want our laptops. They want our computers. And the Taliban will probably hand that thing over for freaking candy bar.
Oh, yeah.
Our technology we had in the military is, I truly believe, surpassed everyone else in this world. And we just handed it to
We own the night. We own the night forever. Ridiculous. We own the night. And that's why we did night ops forever. And it's to hand them PBS-7s and NODs and 14s and the PBS-10 for your scopes for your guns and everything. It's just, all we did was up armor a whole terrorist army, man. And now they're like, oh, you know, we're not going to play in Afghanistan no more. Well, yeah, we are, because now you just gave them a bunch of weapons and rounds. And
they're going to expand.
Everything.
They're not so going to stay in Afghanistan.
Is this the wrong statement? We did wipe out ISIS in a sense, but we gave more power to the Taliban though?
We did, but it's like the enemy of my friend is, you know, how's that saying go?
The enemy of my enemy is
my friend. Yeah. So now they got a whole country, and now they're up armored, and now they're like, oh, shit, you know, the new game in town just left. Now they could go bigger.
They could partner up with Iran, that already hates us and has nuclear capabilities and says they're going to get nuclear capabilities. Iraq is still somewhat our friend a little bit, you know, but they're always at war with Iran, and they got their own problems between their own groups inside of there. So, I mean, everything that was balanced and at least calmed down, like you went through and you put all these little fires out, and they're just little smolder things where you're keeping an eye on. We were able to keep an eye on
all over
it. We just went and just flew over and dumped gasoline on the whole area again.
That's
so,
like,
that whole Middle East is going to be in an uproar over this.
We talked about this before. There's a reason why there's a security clearance for people. You know, that's why all of America doesn't have security clearance, because there's people like us that go in and do bad things. And America just needs to relax and have a nice life and sleep good at night, because there's people like us that take care of that kind of problem. And they don't need to know the nitty gritty about it, but just enjoy their freedom. You know, and that's the thing I love about Trump, is he would drop the choker chain on the warriors and let them go. And things got done, and people were scared of us again.
And we didn't have one conflict in the 4 years he was here.
You know,
because he trusted our commander-in-chief.
Do you remember when he first came in? Our biggest fear in the world
is he's going to nuke everybody.
Well, was North Korea.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on with North Korea? I mean, the only guy we had talking to North Korea was Dennis Rodman. You know, and that was our big fears. at any moment, North Korea is going to start a war.
And you had to walk over the line. What was it, like the second year?
Like a boss.
Yeah.
He walked over the line, grabbed his crotch, and took and walked right into that country. And said, they shook hands. Like
how it was the biggest thing. I mean, he wasn't stupid. He knew not to trust him, but it's got to start somewhere.
Right. You know, there's got to be – he was the alpha dog, and he was like, here's how it is. And people feared us. My friend.
Yeah. They feared our leader. They knew that our leader was vulnerable. They knew, hey, people were like, oh, Trump's unstable. We don't want him near the – the other country world leaders knew that too.
Yeah.
And in his game had them thinking, holy shit, this guy just might be crazy enough to do what he says he's going to do. And that's something the U.S. has rarely done. And like he came, when he first came in, his biggest bitch, his biggest complaint when Trump came in regarding the military was, we always tell the whole world what we're going to do. We tell them we're leaving on this day. We're coming on this day. We can't do this. We can't do that. He said, basically, Channel 21 News knows what we're doing before our soldiers and our military know what we're doing. So we got to stop that stuff. And we did.
Hide moves
and that's the thing. If when we were like in my Iraq the last time, you know, my wife would know because of the family call out groups, you know, the family network. They're like, oh, you're leaving on September 12th or whatever. I'm like, what the hell? I don't even know that. And I'm in country. You know what I mean? I was like, well, you know, they put it out on a flyer. And I'm like, what is going on? And that, you know, that was under Obama or, well, that was right there at the end of Bush. But it was just,
You went in under Bush and then served under Clinton,
Bush again,
Obama. And you'd retired at it when,
cause I met Rumsfeld down in Fort Benning, him and, what's a little guy from Texas that ran for president,
Ross Perot.
He came up and shook me and my buddy's hands. He's like, what are you guys doing tonight? Cause we didn't have no family. And they're like, we're going out drinking. And they're like, okay, boys, you be safe and blah, blah, you know? And they're like, you know who that was? I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, that was Donald Rumsfeld and Ross Perot. I'm like, all right, cool. You know, we didn't know.
All right, cool. I got a job to do.
You know, I'm 20 years old, just got back from Panama and stuff. And it was cool. You know,
now, what countries were you in? I know there's a lot of stuff you can't talk about, a lot of stuff you can't disclose because of what you did. But what were some of the conflicts that you saw, and how would you compare those conflicts to probably what our guys saw in Afghanistan of recent?
Panama was in 88. That wasn't too bad. They kind of fought, not really. They were just, you know, one magazine.
That was Noriega?
That was Noriega, the PDF 2000. And, that wasn't bad. Somalia was really bad. I don't want to talk about that. Gulf War, that was like a big tank war. We were kind of in and out of it. A lot of Ranger battalions went and did some things. A couple companies did. Never really played in that one too much. Then there was, then Afghanistan. But there was a couple ones before that. Like in the, what was that? Kosovo and shit. Like two units from our thing went up with Delta and they did some stuff over there. And I didn't get to go on that one, but a lot of my friends did.
Right.
Well, different company, you know what I mean? I was in Charlie and they were in Alpha and they took that whole company and they're like, well, they're going to be gone for a month. I'm like, damn. But
how many times were you over in Afghanistan or Iraq?
Just once and once. And it was Afghanistan was when I was a platoon sergeant and Iraq when I was a first sergeant. But the platoon sergeant time in Afghanistan was 6 months after 9/11. And it was pretty crazy.
I can imagine.
But we did a lot of ops out of Kandahar. We were way down south and we would fly up to the Helmand province north of Kabul and do just 2-day raids, you know, where you just get dropped off in the middle of the night and you would just walk the whole valley and just clear everything. And that's, you know, we did a lot of that. There were some gunfights. A couple, but they, you know, it was different. And it was a lot of people don't understand is that is a really, really third world country. And Iraq is even worse. I think Iraq is like the empty water bottle capital of the world, because right outside of any gate out of Baghdad or the green zone or anywhere, as soon as you leave the U.S. property, it's as far as you can see is water bottles and trash. That's why there's IEDs out the yin yang, because they're just everywhere. You got one light pole with 5,000 electrical units coming off it in every direction. You're like, holy shit. You know, is this what's really going on? You know, meat markets, goats and chickens. And then there right next to is propane gas and gasoline for sale and little yard apes running all over the place. kids all over the place. And, you know, that's the thing that they don't get is like, they're so third world, but how can they rig up a cell phone and to 3107s and, you know, make a Humvee flip. And that's what, you know, boggles the mind. Cause you're not, you know, back in the day when we were kids, you had the Germans and the Japanese, you knew who you were fighting, you know, now you're just fighting guys in man dresses that look. And the thing that gets a lot of them killed, and I hate to say this, is that cell phone, man. When they walk out in the street and they get a cell phone and they look your way, sorry, man, you're getting shot, because all they are is a lookout, or, you know, they're like, yeah, they're 50 meters away, and that's the next guy down in the building is going to blow you up. So that's a lot of that. And I've seen it in my nephew. He was over there like three times.
Why didn't we just go in and blow out all the cell phone towers?
Well, that's it, true. And the thing is, like, it goes back to now is we fought so long the invisible enemy, and then we're like, you know, Biden's, we're pulling out on the 31st. Well, 2 weeks ago, Taliban was massing outside of Kabul, massing 20, 30,000 troops, lay down a carpet bomb.
We knew what was happening.
Yeah. You know, there they are. There's Tally. Like, they're on the road.
You guys leave. You guys leaving it? We're ready to take over.
Because believe me, I've seen
them. That's what happened. When we started leaving, the Afghani army just laid down their guns and took off. Because
they knew we didn't have their back. They were like, oh, you know.
The Americans.
They just gave up in like a day. And that's what Biden said on the thing. Well, we knew they were going to try to overtake it. We didn't realize it would be this soon. This soon. It was like,
we never should have.
Holy shit. You know, look over and you don't have your big brother standing behind you. You take off running through the woods. Yeah. That's what they did.
Yeah. And it's the thing is like, we should have not. There should have never been an end date for this. No. This should have been a surprise sometime. They're like, hey, check, guess what? November 1st, all the troops are out of Afghanistan. We got all the Americans, all the Terps out. And that was our last troop. And we didn't leave any equipment behind. You know, because what do they need to know? This whole thing about secrecy and security clearance, that's what I'm geared on, because that's what I had.
You have to go through so much history. I had to go when I was in South Korea for about 8 months. It was supposed to be a 2 week. It was a long story, but it was a staff and CRIC gap. So he sent me over there just to make sure no one messed around until the next staff and CRIC came on. But 1 week turned into 2 weeks and ended up being 8 months. But I had to do a top secret clearance request. That paperwork is this thick. They go back to a history of when you were in high school, asking who your friends in high school.
These Taliban soldiers don't do any paperwork.
All that stuff, just that way you can know certain aspects of what's going on in the military. And we just basically said, here's the keys, guys. So they know everything. They have our computers. They got our everything.
And that's the thing now is they had the biometrics of all the interpreters, because it's morphed since I left. And they, you know, they scan them, everything. So they left all that biometrics downrange. So Tally, if they're smart enough to make a freaking car bomb out of a cell phone, they just get on the computer
and find out who has the security clearance.
Oh, let's go get Ahmed. Let's go
find this guy. Yeah, he's got a top secret clearance.
He ran around with this unit. He, you know, he's been against us for 12 years. Let's go get him. And that's, you know, it's going to be like the Gestapo. The SS are just going to go down and grab them all. It's just, I feel bad for him. And by my way, we wouldn't have done this.
Well, let's talk about this equipment a little bit. Chuck, you told me a story the other day that's kind of sat with me a little bit. You had how many jumps out of an airplane?
Oh, 165, one real combat jump.
So that's a lot. But yeah, you said there was a time where you watched someone or had to discipline someone because jumping out of an airplane, he lost his night vision goggles or something. Lost his binoculars.
It's been an NVG. PBS-7s or their M4 would blow out of their 1950s because you jump with your ruck in your 1950s. Well, it's a big, long-ass zipper, and you tape it and everything else, but, you know, it hit on her feet, and you're going, you know, out of a C-130, and it blows open. It happens.
So that's a big deal. So that's
a piece of sensitive equipment. Sensitive item is lost. It's hands across the drop zone, and it's –
your whole unit's looking for that thing.
Everything stops.
There's no way in the world you're going to let a gun or night vision goggles make it to the enemy.
That's it.
We just walked out on hundreds of billions of dollars worth of equipment.
You know,
and nobody's getting disciplined over that. There's probably some guy who lost his advancement in the military. Maybe lost a pay grade, or maybe
you know what I mean.
Yeah, this army discharged.
Page 11. You, that's a it's a nick. We only get you'll get passed over for
promotion. Yeah, you right. get a UCMJ and, you know, mark on
but,
it.
But, and our commander in chief leaves everything over there.
Billions,
and there's nobody. There's nobody getting disciplined over this whole thing. There's no nick on the president of the United States.
That's it. There's no. That's you know, and that's the thing. Like I told you before, we did a raid in Afghanistan in the Helmand Province, and we hit this town. We rocked all day and all night. We got done at night. Well, we made a big patrol base with the gun jeeps and all of our troops and stuff. About zero dark 30, man, they start mortaring us. A lot of mortars. So we're up all night, and then we get Chinooks the next morning. So before they pick us up with the Chinooks, they drop like two pallets of MREs and a big pallet of water off. They airdropped it right by our thing. We got it all. So the Chinooks are landing, and a platoon sergeant buddy of mine, Hutchinson, he was in second platoon. I was in first, and they're all loading up on the 47s. And Hutch went over, was like, "Mac, what do you think?" And I'm like, "Let's do this." And we both had thermite grenades, went over, put it on each of the MRE bundles, and just burned it all. And we shot up the water. Boy, do we get in trouble for that? They're like, "What did you leave it? Why did you do that?" I was like, "Well, sorry about that, sir, but, you know, the intel is we got mortared for 6 hours last night.
So why leave them your food and water?"
Yeah, why are we leaving the enemies? There's no friendlies there. And they're like, "Well, you know, the intel you got." I'm like, "Well, they were there because, you know, the sitrep shows that we got mortared for freaking 6 hours, man." And everybody's like, they kind of like, "Okay, let's not do that again." I'm like, "Are you really? Are you kidding me?" You know, and
who knows? We don't watch water. I mean, that's the minor thing. We're talking Blackhawks and tanks and
weapons and
a whole base.
Yeah. Oh, that and the prisoners they let go. I can't even.
All of them.
You know, I don't understand why we'd give up Bagram. Bagram's in the middle of the country. You know, 20, 30 miles away from Kabul. Why give that up? That's our easy out. You know. Come if Biden's in charge, why didn't you start telling everybody, "Hey, you know, let's start peeling off and head towards Bagram.
Start moseying that way in that direction a little bit, guys."
You know, we're going to start shrinking the perimeter around Bagram, and then because Pakistan's a stone's throw away from Kabul. I mean, it's close.
And that's a friendly with us somewhat, right?
That's where Abbottabad is where Osama bin Laden was at, where the SEALs went and got him. They had to fly across into Pakistan and get him, you know, and it just boggles me. I mean, I'm a lonely first sergeant, did my time almost 21 years. But tactically, what are they thinking? I mean, I grew up Ranger my whole life, and it's just like it's chess, it ain't checkers, man. And it's just like, wow, just to let it go. It's and like, you know, no repercussions at all.
And he tries to put the spin on the past administration, you know, the Biden. Well, Trump's the one that said we were getting out. Trump's the one that did. You know, you're the commander in chief right now. I don't give a crap what the last guy said
or did,
or hoaxed what he was going to do or whatever. You think Trump was giving a game plan out?
He erased everything Trump did his entire tenure as a president. I mean, it's like, okay, this is everything Trump did, and I'm going to go ahead and do executive orders and nix everything he did. Why couldn't you nix this? Why couldn't you prolong it?
Let's ask this, Robert, because you were a recruiter, as we talked about. At the end of your career, you got to recruit. What does this we're seeing on TV right now do to the next generation of guys, for recruiters out there, whether they're recruiting for the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines right now? How hard is their job right now to say, "Come join Uncle Sam right now. We're going to take care of you. We got the great commander in chief's going to watch over you. Things are great in the military." That's got to be the hardest job in the world right now, being a Marine recruiter.
Good luck. I mean, honestly, to any of the recruits out there, it's good luck.
You'd be pulling your teeth out. Holy cow.
I got to sell that. We got a shortage of employees at McDonald's. Now we're not going to be able to find a damn Marine after this stuff.
It was really hard because the majority of the people that citizens here in Chilton Mahoney County talked to, you had to build a good trust. You had to show that you were credible. You had to show that you can trust them. And because recruiters already got the stink on the head, they're a bunch of liars. I mean, because there are some bad seeds out there. They are. I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, but there are some good recruiters out there, just like there's good and bad no matter where you're at. But it wasn't just the individual joining that you had to build their trust with. It was their mom, their dad, their brother, their sister, their daughter.
Is he on the up and up? Son. Yeah. Okay.
Everyone. A lot of people, you had to actually build their trust. And then one was really hard. I won't mention their name. I don't want to blast
single them out. Yeah.
Single them out. But I promised them. And that person is still in the military. They changed to the Army. You know,
like, they probably needed to make rank.
So, but I mean, changing to the Army was a great, great kid. I loved the kid again. He was one of the best person I ever put. But I promised him, I promised his mother, I promised his dad that this is what the Marine Corps will do. We will take care of you. This is what will go on. And he enlisted during Obama. Ooh. And I was like, this is what's going to happen. I'm like, and they, some questions about Obama and him being our commander in chief. I was like, but you need to understand, you know, this is how it works. This is what's going to happen. Yeah, we might have a bad feeling for Obama. But one thing I do give Obama some credit is that he did kind of allow, to some extent, the military to run their own show. It'd be like me going down to a local bakery office down there and tell them how to make a cake, and I ain't got no clue.
Yeah.
I'm what's called a pogue, a person other than grunt.
I can't believe you said that.
All right.
Awesome.
So it basically be like someone like me trying to go to your unit and tell you guys how to run
an airfield seizure.
And I have no clue.
Let's do an airfield seizure today.
Let's go. I mean, you said 100 and some odd jumps. They're like me trying to go down to your crew. It's like, this is how we're going to pack
your kit today.
All right. Yeah. This is how it's going to happen. I have no clue. And we had the same thing. Biden just didn't listen to any of the generals, any of the officials that are down there, boots on the ground, saying, hey, this is, I understand you want to leave. We want to leave too. This is how we need to do it. He just said, screw it. I'm going to do it my
way. I understand now too. We have, you know, that's one story, trying to recruit people for the future. But we got a lot of our sons and daughters there now.
Yeah.
They're there now. They're in. They already said the ink's dry. They're in a unit right now. They're watching what's going on TV. And I'll kind of relate this to the Cleveland Browns. How many times we hated the ownership? How many times we hated Art Modell? How many times have you hated Haslam for the stuff that he did? Maybe you hated the coach, but you never hated the team. Right. You never hated Bernie. You're still a Browns fan.
Right.
We still support them 100% no matter what. You know, we are on their side with things. So if you got a son or daughter out there, you know, we still need to support our military. We need to still support our military 100% with everything we have in it. We need to support them. We need to let them know that we're there. We need to appreciate what they do. Your service, Chuck. We need to appreciate military men and women always, forever, period. There's no question about that. We can question the leadership politically, you know, and we can put pressure. If there's a problem right now with our leader, we can vote. Yeah, we can vote a new congressman that's going to be pro-military. We can vote for a senator that's pro-military. We can let our Congress and Senate put checks and balances on the commander-in-chief. That's the only way we can do this thing, is politically and fight it politically. Unfortunately, it's not something that happens immediately. Mm-hmm. It's something that's got to happen over time. It's going to happen in 2022. We get a chance to add a whole new Congress nationwide. Then we get a chance to add a third of the Senate nationwide. And people need to think about this and say, you know, we need to support our guy that's flying the C-130. We need to support our Ranger that's waiting for his next
order. One thing I would like to add too is that I'm like, we may not have trust in our administration, but trust who is in your son, your daughters, your husband, your wife's unit. Because absolutely, they will have each other's back. Even I know everyone sees the brotherly love, more or less, you know, Army, Marine Corps, we always butt heads. We'll make the jokes, you know, but we always have each other's back. So that's one thing I can say with 100% certainty, is that the person to the right and left, in front of them, behind them, will always have their back. We'll always make sure that they do everything they can, because when you're out there on the field, and I know I'm not a combat veteran in any way, but the way it works is, I will always put my life on him. He will always put his life on the line for me. So it's always knows that we will always take care of each other. So
yeah,
you may not have respect for the administration, but have respect for the military, like you said.
What happens in the arena happens in the arena. Yeah. Those guys are tight.
All that stuff goes out the window of the politics.
It's, you know, and I don't care if you're black, white, purple, pink, polka dotted. You got that red, white, and blue flag on your shoulder, you know.
You know, we had a military under Carter. We had a military under Obama. We had a military under Clinton. We're going to have a military under Biden. We still move on from it. We still move on and job at task. We'll have good commander-in-chiefs again. And we do have, you know, we have the best fighting military in the world, hands down, like Chuck said. If you let them do their job, just sit back
and enjoy it.
Sleep tonight. You know, enjoy the freedom that you have, because there are guys behind the scenes that are doing the stuff to keep us safe. Yeah. And now this here, you know, this will affect world safety. It will affect American safety. Right now, we don't know how many Americans are over there. You know, we maybe 3,000, maybe 12,000. maybe 100, you know, we don't know, but we do know there are a lot of American sympathizers, a lot of people that we brought into our ranks to be friends with us.
We promise
we owe it to them too. Yeah. We owe it to them as humans that we take care of them. We just don't let the,
yeah,
you know, these, we just these gave animals.
The Taliban a list of all the individuals who are aiding us in their area, and we promised that we would take care of them. All these individuals from Afghanistan are like, well, okay, we trust you. You know, you're going to have our back.
Yeah, and we've been there for almost, you know, 20 years, them. Over 20 years, and we just left
them. We're not going to get their trust ever again. Good luck with that.
Yeah. The only time we're going to get it back is if we do an actual war where it's not an Operation Enduring Freedom or Operation This or Operation. You drop the choker chain and you let our boys do what they got to do, and things will get done. And I hate to be... I'm not a warmonger or anything like that, but when those guys train,
no, we got human shields now, though, because the Taliban knows who's friends and who wasn't. Mm-hmm. You got all these Afghani soldiers that did fight against them for years and years and years.
They're
fleeing as far as they can go to other places, but they're not going to get. They're not all going to get away.
No.
Their families aren't going to get away. Taliban doesn't play nice. Taliban plays the worse
forget,
than
the people forget the, all the videos of them beheading them live on YouTube. I mean, it seems like everyone forgot that. I mean, right. The Taliban.
They hung a guy from a helicopter yesterday. They showed a guy in a Blackhawk, with someone hanging from it flying over the city.
Talk diplomatically to these individuals, and they're like, no question, no remorse. And they cut their head off. They didn't care. And we want her, and Biden wants us to
embrace them.
Hey, please allow us some time. You know, we'll get out of there. Oh, yeah, sure. Just tell us where you're at. We'll give you amnesty. Yeah, okay. Amnesty means you're going to go in front of the Lord and after. Face judgment.
That's gonna go meet your maker here real quick.
That's what the Taliban's gonna do. They don't care.
No, they got time. All they got is time. Now they got weapons.
Time and the weapons
and everything that we left.
And everything that they built. You know, they built oil refineries, if they built an infrastructure system, if they built chemical plants and power plants and try to get their country back up and running over 20 years, you get a lot of progress in 20 years.
Yeah. Plus they're secretive and they got their whole flipping them to meet all or whatever they like to do. I don't know. I don't like any of them, but that's just how I feel. You know, that's their radicalize them. You know, all them young kids, you know, them young kids that were 7 or 8 back in 2001, they're, you know, in their early 20s now, and they're getting ready to fight. You know, they've heard nothing but 20 years of how the Americans are bad. And here's a new brand new M4 and some new boots, dude. Mm-hmm. Now he's a new fighter. So, they think it's over. It's not. Not by a long shot.
That's
a scary thought, but it's in the back of my mind. It's like, you know, the more there's going to be more of this crap coming over. I mean, look at the southern border. They're flooding over.
They're here.
You know, you put an Afghani next to a Mexican, I'm not being racist, but, you know, no one's going to tell
the difference. You blend them all in. There's 30 guys in a group, you know, and they're running everywhere and you're not even chasing them or you know, watch them get on a bus and head to Detroit or whatever.
And there's three dudes. All it takes is 2 or 3 guys, and there's a cell, and they'll rent a house and get a job, you know. And then there's your big shooter thing, you know. I mean, criminally, one bomb killed 13 of our people, and hell, they wounded like, what, 60 or 70 of them. They're like, oh, is it bad? I'm like, you know, no one in the United States ever gets put in a dirty-ass wheelbarrow to get trucked to the hospital. Do you see that video? After the bombing right outside, it's like, that doesn't happen in the United States. That's a third world country. That's what happens. And the Taliban, they just laugh. They're like, oh, look, you know, you're 70 plus 13. We're doing good. You know, and it's just, and people are just this false sense of this whole thing. It's like, listen, man, I think it's going to get worse. And I'm not trying to be a doomsayer, but it's like.
Well, I can't see how it won't get worse, because when you got.
We lost all our intel on the ground over there. We lost our foothold on the ground, you know. Look how long we've been in South Korea, and we had to keep them in check. Why the heck did we leave? We lost all our human intelligence gathering.
Yeah, we've been in South Korea for longer than I've been alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, what does it matter? You know what I mean? Instead of, you know, instead of big posts in Germany, I know that's a staging area for the Middle East, but keep them all in Afghanistan around Bagram.
Nice little skeleton crew there. Keep a small
base. Yeah.
And you're perfectly fine. Let the government do that thing.
You keep all the Turks around.
If you get little uprising hotspots in different parts, then
snuff it out.
Handle it accordingly in cooperation with the Afghani army that we trained.
Yeah.
Using all our equipment.
Let them lead out. But they need our air support. They need our gun trucks, and they need people that, and I hate to say it, is Americans like to fight. I mean, that's what being in the Army and in the Marine Corps is. That's a job, man. You know, it's like the Spartans movie. You know, Spartans are straight up killers, and then they talk to them other Greeks, and they're like, "Hey, what's your job?" "Well, you know, I'm a sculptor."
Yeah, I know.
"I'm a sculptor," and they're like, "Oh, geez, okay."
Spartan, what's your profession? And they're all like,
you know, and that's the way the mentality is in America. It's like, you know, there's going to be recruiters, there's wrenches, there's cooks, there's everything, you know, and it's, we all need them all. But when you throw American force down on the ground, dude, you better look out. You better look out, because it's the truth. You know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what year it was. I forget. It was in the early 2000s. It was like right after all this happened. It was, and I totally forget the base. I'll have to figure it out. But it was a base that was being overran, and their infantry unit was actually out on patrol. It was the administration,
held them off.
The desk jockeys that picked up their M16s and fought them off, because that's what we are. You don't mess with Americans, especially our military. Right. It was them. And every person in the military is an infantryman first.
Yeah,
you know that's how it is. So it's like, even though they're paralegalists, they
are a soft skill.
These guys off. I mean,
yeah. They know how to fire a weapon and shoot, move, and communicate. It's.
We're getting a lot of people sending messages in on Facebook on Youngstown Studios. A lot of thank you for your services, and of course, on behalf of Youngstown Studios and all of our listeners and all the staff and crew here. You know, this is kind of an honor to have you guys on the show. First of all, to talk about this stuff, some pretty good comments there. You want to make sure also you want to share the show with some of your buddies and friends. We got to let people know that this is real. This is real with real Americans. There are people that leave. I mean, there's some people that don't leave the Mahoning Valley.
No.
You know, they live their whole lives in a bubble and they don't realize what goes on. And they want to, you know, their biggest bitch is, you know, the
gas
traffic on 224 or something when they're going to, you know, pick up their prescription at the pharmacy or whatever it is. There's real stuff that happens in this world, and you guys have seen some of that real stuff that keeps the world so that it's safe, so that we can do what we do. We can agree to disagree with the First Amendment. We can agree or we can have our firearms at home with our Second Amendment. We can vote. There's so many freedoms we have in this country, and those freedoms didn't come free.
Yeah.
Those freedoms came because there was some soldier or some Marine or some military man or woman somewhere along the line, whether it be people that threw tea in Boston Harbor or people that, you know, flipped off the British Army from across the gorge and then fired a bullet down range at them. There are people there that fought so that we can have the freedom and the rights that we have today. That was all sculpted, not out of ink, but out of blood, blood that caused all this stuff. And now, unfortunately, we're dealing with it, you know, in another world. And some people, you know, it's hard to say, you know, what are we doing in the Middle East for anyway? Why do we even have people over there? You know, there's a girl that I work with that her son is a pilot, you know, and it's like he's over there doing some stuff, and it's like, wow, you know, to go from Wisconsin to there, you know, that doesn't even, it's hard to even fathom, you know, that somebody who was just hanging out with his wife and kids and stuff at birthday parties and everything and living a normal life gets a phone call.
Time to go.
Here's where you're going. And he's over there doing this stuff, and we're sleeping at night and, you know, doing our thing here in America, doing our thing that we do every day, you know, complaining about stimulus checks and whatever else.
Jobs. And don't get me started on that.
I went to a restaurant last night in Canton. We look forward to this meeting every year, and we go there, and they're closed on Mondays now. They never were before, but they're closed now because lack of employees. Lack of staff. I mean, you got Dollar General shutting down because they can't fund somebody. It's just ridiculous, that type of stuff. But that stuff is so minor. That stuff is so minute compared to the family that's out there right now that has, you know, a son or daughter in the military. And even at my meeting last night, one of our guys is like, "Hey guys, let's keep politics out of our conversation tonight. Let's just talk about, you know, what we need to talk about with the gun raffle and whatever." He's got a son that's in the Marines. You know, of course, it isn't like, you know, he's texting his dad every minute where they're at, where they're moving, what they're doing, and stuff like that. And so there's a lot of families out there that are worrying.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just like your family did, you know, 21 years. I can only imagine the worry your mother, your sisters.
Man, you don't ever play the game with mom. Is call her once and is like, "Guess where I'm at?" you know, my mom's like, "Don't even call me no more. Just, you know, send me a letter. Call me when you get back." Because I would call her somewhere. "Guess where I'm at?" where you at today? I'm like, never mind. I can't tell you, you know, watch the news, Mom, watch the news.
Right. I mean, that's going to be horrendous. You know, when someone's in the military, it's a whole family involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a whole family. I've experienced it a little bit through the Marine Corps with seeing someone go that was close. Then, you know, the mother's not the same for the whole time he's gone, for the years he's gone. Grandma's not the same. Holidays aren't the same. It's always, you know, until that person is done and home and safe and retired or finishes their duty and then they're home or whatever, that's when you finally exhale. You know, there is no, and I guess you can get used to it.
That's the problem.
We got used to it.
The men, it doesn't bother me. I've done it so long. It never bothered me. I knew it bothered Regina a lot, but it was just part of my life. And that's what, you know, you and I both lived through the military and it astonished me. Like, you get into civilian life and you really noticed how few people are very hard. Mm-hmm. Like the little, like my 100% at work is like 300% of people at work. I could put in like a 20% day at work and it's like 150% of some other guys at work. Cause it's just like, man, you just don't know what hard is. You don't know
it's not that hard of a job to do it. Let's get it done.
It's like, and it's just like, it's the suck fest. And it's just like, that you guys don't get it. Nobody gets it unless you've been in the arena or you served. You're like, wow. You know,
you busted up your hips, your knees, your arms, many surgeries.
Every year is all like that stuff.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I mean, some of the stories that I've heard, not just from you, but other military men and women, you put on a line. That's why when you retired, I kind of like your attitude a little bit now. You know, because when I first met you, it's like, I want to hear the stories. I want to hear this. I want to hear that. And you're just like, dude, I've been there. I've done that. I moved on from it. I just want to go fishing.
That's it.
I just want to go fishing. You got into another line of work. You joined a union. You got another career as a millwright.
Yep.
And the military days, I'm sure, behind you, but they're always with you. They're always in you. They're always a part of you.
Yeah. Every day.
And I'm sure you probably had the thought, too. And I, you know, knowing you guys the way that I do, when you see this stuff on the news, you're probably thinking, boy, what I would have done, and I'd like to do that. Let me in there for 5 minutes. Let's go, guys. Let's
go back in a heartbeat.
Just like, you know, football players. Let me put that uniform on one more. Mm-hmm. You know, those are your brothers. Those are your people. And you did that for a living for so long. It's hard to say that's someone else's job now. That's who you are. It's in your blood.
Yeah, it is. It's hard to – you can't – there's no off button. There's no timeout. You think about it. I think about it all the time. And it bothers me sometimes. And then sometimes, you know, you try to just drive on and do – something else.
It's hard.
Yeah. Too.
It's hard to know that you can't be out there and doing what your brothers and sisters are doing.
Right. And that goes for any military men or women. You know, we hear about that, you know, 22 suicides a day when guys get out.
Oh,
you know,
that's terrible.
You know, there needs to be better support. You know, there's no reason in the world, and many people say it, there's no reason in the world that we should have any type of aid, any type of stimulus, any type of anything, as long as there's one military man or woman is not sleeping on the streets. As long as there's one of them out there that's not getting the service or the help or the care and guidance that they deserve.
My biggest thing is after 21 years, it's like pulling teeth from a grizzly bear to get anything accomplished. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Once you take that uniform off and now you're a civilian, you're retired, you know, they question everything. And it's like, you know, no one questioned me. There's no timeout on a drop zone. There's no time out in a raid. You know, I didn't question, like, well, you know, you got to be square with me when I retire and my blow out my knee, you know, are we good? We didn't stop, you know, but once you're out and you're retired, you know, the VA is like, well, you know, where you're at, really? Is let's it really that problem?
Oxycontin. Let's just give you some narcotics.
Yeah, it's such a pain. It's like, why you even question me? You see my ID card, you look at my 201 file, you've seen what I've done, you know, you see the hip, the feet, the elbow. It's like, wow, really? I got to explain myself. You know, and it's just the care for these young kids, because I've seen it, like the first time in Afghanistan, I was 32, and like all my guys were 19, 20 years old, maybe 24 squad leaders. Man, you want to talk about the pucker factor, baby, you know, and they're like looking at me because I was already in Panama. I'm like, just, you know, another day. And they're like, what's going to be? I'm like, dude, relax. We're not going to see anything for 30 days. You know, and it's just like, it was, I guess it's combat patience. I've been there, done that. But I mean, once we got into it, my guys gelled and did good. But I could see the fear of the unknown with a lot of these guys. And then to to see the guys with 4 and 5 tours, like my nephew. Holy shit, you come back and you know they're burnt. You can just see in their face. You just got the, you know, the look. And you're like, wow, seen too much. You know what I mean? For being so young.
Right.
But, you know, my hat's off to everybody who's still serving all the branches. And I'm just like, you know, I know they got to be, what would you call it? Like the gag order now. Not to say anything.
It's one of the biggest things. We're not allowed to say anything negative at all about any of our upper echelon.
That's why that one colonel from the Marine Corps just went on YouTube's like, you know, touched on the bases about accountability and was like, you know, I can't believe this. And he handed his resignation in.
Had enough.
17 years. And he would have got paid well as a light colonel.
Yeah.
Three more years,
and he's just like, I had enough.
You know,
it's for
and somebody, there's a lot of commanders out there. I know a lot
to
of
make it to his rank. He had to have done
a lot.
Fast. He just basically said, the next 3 years is not worth it. I'm out.
Yeah,
that's got to tell you something. I mean, I put in 11 years. I wanted to stay. I was medically retired. I would have wanted to do.
You did 11 years.
11 years before I was medically retired. I just had too many spine surgeries. But it was like, for this individual who put in 17 years to make it as a colonel.
Like colonel, yeah.
You know, it's like he did a lot. Because for officers to get to that level, they had to have had a combat. They had to have had everything and
more. He checked every box and more.
And then he just, I want to say, gave it away because I'm really proud for everything he's done. Everyone who's done anything in their military. But it's like he just said,
he couldn't take it more.
Take it.
I'll tell you, that just gave me a whole new respect. It's just, the light just clicked on with me. You know, you're running for Austintown trustee.
I am.
You know, and you got the 11-year military background. And I'm thinking, you know, Josh Mandel was
a
Marine. You know, and he did some time overseas. You know, Frank LaRose. You know, he was a Green Beret. He Green Beret and I'm looking at this stuff and I'm thinking that should be a damn requirement. You know, you see the guys like. Crenshaw, I think his name is.
Dan Crenshaw. He's from Texas.
Those military guy. They've seen it. They've done it. They've got that. You know, if they've got a military background more than their 4 years, that they've got a lifestyle pattern of organization. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no way they made it that long
squared away.
Or a slouch. There's no way they made it long or were a liar. There's no way they made it that long and didn't know how to lead or didn't know organizational skills or management skills. So, you know, that's I got to tell you, I got new respect for you too, Robert. I didn't know you did that long, and not that any service didn't matter, but now you're doing the politic route, just like Josh Mandel, just like Frank LaRose, and some of our other best leaders that we've had out there.
It's their drive to assist the community in this nation. It's like obviously at whatever reason why they left, the reason why I got out of the military. It's like I still want to help out this community. I want to help out this nation. It's why Mandel, LaRose, you name it, actually anyone who steps into the political field, it's because they just want to help whatever side they are at. Right. They want to continue to serve this nation. And you can't really, you can as a civilian, you know, but to a point. The best way to make an impact other than being in the military is to get into politics to help write these laws and these regulations to ensure that our military is doing what they need to do to ensure civilians within our community are actually thriving and not just surviving.
And it's probably that same call to serve. And I know, Chuck, you've contemplated that in the past too. Mike Hovis, who's running for Bezetta Township trustee, you know, he's got a military background. And it, you know, that's something, you know, you got to trust that. You have to really look, you know, and admire and honor that because, you know, Uncle Sam's already got you in the right path toward service, already the right path toward leadership. So, yeah, maybe we need to look at that a little deeper as we vote. Maybe we need to look at if credentials a little more.
If you look at it, I can pull it up for you later, but if you look at it, if you look at the trust level that we had for our Senate and our Congress, the trust level was actually declining. And if you also look on the veteran representation that we have, it is declining just as much as the trust. Because obviously, as veterans as veterans are no longer being elected into office, so isn't the trust. You would think that, hey, if both lines are coinciding.
Back in the day, we started in Washington.
Yeah.
General Washington, you had him, and then all the way through Teddy Roosevelt, and you had the Ulysses S. Grant. I mean, that military.
Most of our presidents were military background.
They were. We got community organizers. We got career politicians.
It has to do with us.
We got philanderers and womanizers.
It has to do with us not really allowing while we're in service talk politics, because we got the whole mindset of it doesn't matter about DR, independent, Green Tea Party, Libertarian. This is what's best for our community. This is what it is. This is the mission. Let's rebuild. Let's make sure we strengthen our community, nation, local, trustee level, whatever it is. And that's why these veterans have that type of mentality, and why they're so successful when they get in office, is because they have that mentality of, okay, I get it. We're not going to let this political drama that you see on the media happen. This is the right way to do it. I don't care who you are. Let's do it the right way. Like, what Biden should have done is he should have listened to our generals and done it the way that they have been trained.
But those guys with 4 stars, man, you know, they're out of touch with reality. They've been up too far up the Pentagon and hanging out and taking care of.
They never see a young general. Those guys are always the oldest guys in the room.
You know, he's like 65, 70, and they're like, yeah, that's what we decided to do. I'm like, oh, man, he's out of touch. You know, you see the big brass, you're like.
I like the Mustangs. Officers that were enlisted before the army had the same. But it's just the whole individuals trying to
better a better place, better your home.
That's it.
Down with that.
Well, we got about 3 minutes or so left here to wrap things up. And any last thoughts, Chuck, on kind of the world, what's going on in the world right now in this thing?
Oh boy, you know, I wish. They would have done better on Afghanistan, but we really need to watch our southern border, man. That's a flood zone, and that's just, you know, that's the fatal funnel, man. They're all coming up from the south. Now you got a whole Taliban-controlled Afghanistan. How long is it going to take them to get them over here and fly them out, fly them somewhere to come up through Mexico?
Right.
You know, through Africa, somewhere, anywhere. You know, and it's, you know, I'm not racist or nothing, but they all look the same, and now there's no catch and release. They're all catch and release. They don't keep them. They don't, you know. It really bugs me because they have more rights than we do as workers, you know, with this whole vaccine crap.
Right.
You know, and I've been vaccinated my whole 21 years.
I mean, we got great people with Border Patrol. Most of them probably speak Spanish, but I doubt any of them, very few of them speak Arabic.
Or Farsi,
the difference between a Syrian and Afghani and Taliban and a Shiite or whatever, if that guy's coming across the border and disguised with a wife and kids, whatever it may be that they would do. I mean, my big thing is, you know, they talk about the border and stuff like that. You know, they don't make heroin in Iowa cornfields.
No.
You know, heroin is coming from somewhere across the border, and it's here, and any school kid can get it right now. So we're not doing a good job of protecting our borders. When somebody can get cocaine and heroin anywhere in America, that it's a product that is not grown or made in America in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
So you tell me you can't stop that, but you're stopping terrorists. I don't buy it.
I don't trust it. And I mean, my hat's off to the Border Patrol agents, because I wouldn't want that job. Sorry, man.
Talk about, you know, doing a job with your hands tied behind your back.
That's it. Mm-hmm. That's what I was just thinking. I'm like,
what are they going to do next? Take away their bulletproof vests to save money? I mean, that's all they can really do to those guys. Give them squirt guns. I mean, they've already.
I mean,
humiliated those guys and took away their tools to do things. It's unbelievable.
And the bad thing, Trump was just a big cheerleader, loved them to death. They were doing a great job. We had the wall going. Everything was declining. Mm-hmm. You know, jobs were, you know, and that's what everybody's like, oh, this, that, and the other. I'm like, at my plan is like, man, when did you ever, you've been here for 35, 40 years. When did you ever work 7 days a week? Never. And I'm like, thank Trump for that. I was like, you know, no China steel. We were making bricks for steel out there 7 days a week, dude. It was crazy. And it just, as soon as he got in office, it dropped, you know, and then the whole free money thing. That's another thing that chaps my ass. It's just like, holy cow, man. Well, I just
wake up, America. That's all I got to say is wake up. You know, we're turning red here in the Mahoning Valley, and red's the way to go with this stuff when it comes to even to the military. We were able to tie that into today's show a little bit. But I appreciate Chuck McManus, retired Army Ranger. Thank you for your service. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing some of the stories I know are very, very personal. You know, I've heard tidbits and everything, and
you'll hear,
you know, more. I don't know. We might have a new wave, but there might be a big mass rally or whatever to have both McManuses on the show from now on.
Holy cow. Look out.
We'll definitely have to have you back. No doubt about that. And Robert Santos, again, thank you for your service. We wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Austintown Trustees race is coming up this fall.
November 2nd.
November 2nd, man. You guys want somebody clean, somebody that's going to serve their country like they served Uncle Sam and fight for you, fight for the citizens of Austintown. Robert Santos, you know, you. I wish I lived in Austintown right now so I could vote for you.
Thank you.
So we wish you the best of luck on that. Next week, we have Nick Santucci is going to be our guest. Nick, and Nick is running for state representative up in Trumbull County to replace it's kind of an open seat. Mike O'Brien has it, but it's kind of been open for the last couple, 8 years, because really not much has got done out of that seat. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have Nick on here, see what his plans are to do some progress up in Trumbull County.
He's a
great guy. And then we got some other great guests lined up. Make sure you share our show. Make sure you comment. And if you like what you heard on here, you know, give us some feedback. You have future guests you want to hear here on Turning Red. But on behalf of Regina and myself, thank you again, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.